ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Carol Tracy, author of Vegan Cowboy. That's a little later in the show, but first some news.
The beef additive known as pink slime has slowly made its way back onto supermarket shelves more than 2 years after numerous food manufacturers vowed to stop using it. Soaring beef prices have compelled some companies to turn back to pink slime, or what they call lean, finely textured beef, as a means of lowering production cost. Since the USDA approved pink slime's use in 2001, food manufacturers have created the additive through a process where the fat is separated from meat in beef trimmings before the final product is exposed to ammonia to kill pathogens. While USDA officials consider pink slime harmless, many critics point to a series of ABC News investigative pieces in 2012 that describe it as a product that once could only be found in dog food. Research has also highlighted the effects of pink slime's ammonia. Exposure to the ammonia can cause long-term damage to the human digestive system, blood vessels, liver, and kidneys. Plus, studies in recent years, including one conducted by the Center for Science in the Public Interest in 2013, found that leftover pathogens in processed meat and poultry accounted for a third of hospitalizations from foodborne illnesses like Listeria, Salmonella, and E. coli. These revelations, however, didn't stop school officials in Illinois, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Texas from allowing pink slime back into school cafeterias in 2013. School systems in Iowa, Nebraska, and South Dakota never stopped using the meat additive in the midst of the national uproar in 2012. The FDA and the USDA have been slow to act against the use of ammonia and other chemicals in food production, and the USDA still doesn't require food manufacturers to indicate on labels that their products contain the ingredient.
From One Green Planet, did you know livestock production accounts for 51% of global greenhouse gas emissions annually? This makes livestock production the leading cause of climate change. Yet all signs point to the fact that based on global diet trends, these numbers are only poised to grow. So, as a global community, we're in a bit of a pickle, to say the very least. A new report from Nature Climate Change reveals that our current trends in food production alone will cause us to reach and possibly exceed global targets for greenhouse gas emissions by 2050, meaning all other sources of greenhouse gas emissions, including burning fossil fuels and natural gas, will push us far over 2050 targets. As the report explains, more and more cultures across the world are adopting a Western diet that emphasizes meat consumption. The result is more land is needed to grow feed for livestock, and more space is needed to house these additional animals that are being introduced into the global food system. However, the sad reality is that the earth is not growing, and we're running out of arable land fast in trying to meet this demand. The only solution to allow us to produce more livestock to satisfy a meat-intensive diet is to cut down old-growth forests to make space. And deforestation does not come without consequence. As rich rainforests are chopped down, all the carbon they have absorbed over their lifetime is released back into the atmosphere. So as these forests disappear to make room for livestock, carbon dioxide levels go up, biodiversity goes down, and the introduction of methane-producing cattle, chickens, and pigs means more greenhouse gases added to an already stressed atmosphere. Nature Climate Change predicts that by 2050, if we continue on a business-as-usual course with agriculture, cropland to grow feed will have to increase by 42%. Additionally, fertilizer use will rise by 45%, and an additional one-tenth of the world's pristine rainforest will be sacrificed at this cost. The grand total of all these additions figures to an increase of greenhouse gases credited to food production by 80%. And even if these projections come to fruition, there still won't be enough food available to feed the 9.6 billion people who will inhabit the Earth in 2050. Agriculture centered around livestock production is incredibly inefficient. For every 100 calories of grain grown to feed livestock, only 3 calories of beef are produced. So, this huge problem must involve an incredibly complex solution, right? Actually, the answer is no. While the study details these rather daunting figures, this is by no means a death sentence. In fact, the author of this report asserts that by simply eating a more balanced diet that eliminates an excess of meat, we can effectively drive down greenhouse gas emissions before they come to a cataclysmic head. By simply phasing out meat derived from animals and incorporating more plant-based meat options into your diet, you can help lower the global demand for increased livestock production. While the best solution is to eliminate all meat, dairy, and eggs from your diet, even making a gradual change that slowly removes meat from the center of your daily meals can make a huge difference. If we consider the environmental impact that our food choices make every day, we can shape a more efficient food system that is able to sustain life well beyond the next 35 years.
The Center for Biological Diversity reports on yet another hearing targeting endangered species protections. On September 9th, Tea Party Republicans attacked protections for 3 extremely imperiled species, the lesser prairie chicken, Delta smelt, and Utah prairie dog. The hearing discussed proposed legislation that would put each of the 3 species on a fast track to extinction. The committee had previously held a separate hearing in Pennsylvania attacking proposed protections for a 4th species, the northern long-eared bat, which has declined by more than 90%. The hearings focused on 3 different bills designed to gut the Endangered Species Act. H.R. 1927 would weaken protections for Delta smelt and endangered salmon in California by prohibiting implementation of water pumping restrictions and other protections required under both state and federal law. H.R. 4256, which was introduced by Utah's Republican congressional delegation, requires the Fish and Wildlife Service to count all individuals of a species prior to making any listing decision and is largely focused on Utah prairie dogs. H.R. 4866 would drop endangered species protections for lesser prairie chickens and prohibit any protection under the act until 2020. H.R. 4256 attack on Utah prairie dogs is particularly problematic because rare endangered species are often difficult to count. Because of this, the bill would prevent many imperiled species from being protected. According to the Center for Biological Diversity, these bills are not solutions designed to conserve and recover endangered species. They're extinction decrees. While Republicans make a point of claiming to care about endangered species, these bills demonstrate they routinely oppose on-the-ground steps necessary to actually prevent the extinction of particular species.
Stay with us. Coming up next is a conversation with Carol Tracy, who writes about animal rights issues, believing that one day compassion towards animals will be the norm, and non-human animals will be seen as fellow earthlings living in harmony, not subjugation. We'll be discussing her new book, Vegan Cowboy. That's next on Animal Concerns of Texas. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas Radio is Carol Tracy. Thanks for being with us, Carol.
Well, thank you for having me.
Carol, can you start off by telling our listeners how you got involved in veganism?
Yes. The journey started probably 26 years ago. I had read Animal Liberation by Peter Singer.
Yeah, that was my first book, too.
Yeah, it really turned my world upside down and opened that door for Diet for a New America. And when I read that, that's when I really started looking at my food choices. And I decided at that time after I read the book that I would become a strict vegetarian. But I was married at the time, and my husband was not happy with the choice, to say the least. And I tried to get him to read the book, and I think he got maybe a third of the way through and didn't want to read anymore.
So you divorced him.
Right.
Well,
then.
Fortunately, I had a son, and when he was 6, I divorced my husband. So no, it took me a while. I was one of those that had already been through a divorce, and I really didn't want to do it again, but push came to shove, and I had to.
Yeah.
In the meantime, what I did, and it's interesting when I think about my progression, because I live in Petaluma, and I don't know if you realize this, but Petaluma is the home to Rocky, the range chicken.
Never heard of him.
Never heard of him. Probably because it might just be West Coast. And so I thought, okay, I'm not going to eat any meat, just Rocky. And because it's a range chicken, so it must be running all over the place, right? So I remember being in Petaluma Market with my husband, and Rocky was twice the amount of the regular chickens. And we almost had a altercation in the store because he didn't want to buy it, and I did. And then, of course, I found out later that range means 12 inches for a chicken.
And yeah, it's not like a big open space.
No.
You're not like out in the countryside like the pictures of the happy cow.
Yeah. It's
right, and pictures of Rocky with a little top hat and a cane out in the field. Nothing like that. So I went from strict vegetarian, where I really didn't eat eggs and maybe a little dairy, to 4.5 years ago I went vegan. I just realized I don't need cheese. I don't need any animal product.
Especially those wearing a top hat and a cane.
They get stuck in your throat. It's really hard to digest.
It's really gamey.
And now, of course, the whole idea of eating any animal product or wearing any animal product is so distasteful. So that was my evolution. And I can't even imagine going back ever.
And sometimes it's hard to imagine what you were thinking at the time, you know. And even if you try to think, oh, yeah, these chickens are out there running around, someplace in the back of your mind, you know, they're still being slaughtered for food.
I didn't want to think about that. I never wanted to think about the end for the animal. And in Petaluma, there's a chicken slaughterhouse. So it's called Petaluma Poultry Processors. I even mention it in the book. And I don't drive by it all the time, but it's there. I knew it was there. And I believe that, like millions and millions of people who are omnivores, they just don't want to think about it. It's a lot easier not to think about that. And if somebody, and I'm sure you, all three of you, have witnessed when you try and explain to people what's happening to the animals, they tell you, they put their hands up to their ears, say, don't tell me, don't tell me.
Yeah.
Like, well, it ain't going to go away just because you don't want to hear it.
Right.
When I watch a cooking show on television, I just don't understand how they can dice up these animals and not even think about where, what they're doing, where it comes from.
Right. Well, there's, because people are so far removed from it, and even though the internet has created this amazing encyclopedia of anything you ever want to know, I believe that people want to be kept in the dark because they don't want to face that reality.
Yeah. Well, I think it's due to the internet too that the number of vegetarians and vegans has doubled in the last 5 years.
That's wonderful. I'm surprised it hasn't tripled because everywhere you look,
yeah,
you can find an article, or I started expanding my Twitter feed, and I cannot get over worldwide how many vegan Twitterers there are. Everywhere.
It's better to be Twitter than a twit, I guess.
Definitely.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your book, Vegan Cowboy. It takes place in Petaluma, which is in wine country in Northern California. Why did you choose that as the backdrop for your story?
When I first started looking into writing, I first started writing screenplays and realized working in Petaluma, so far from Hollywood, I better start changing my writing genre. So. But when I first started writing, one of the tips for writers is to write about what you know. And I figured if I write about Petaluma, I can get everything correct and accurate. Plus, it gives it a nice local flavor. so people in Petaluma or in Sonoma County that read it can identify with the streets or with the landscape. So that's why I did that, because I wanted it to be as realistic as possible for a novel.
Yeah, but there's really no such thing as a vegan cowboy, is there?
Well, Howard Lyman is a vegan cowboy.
Oh, well, yeah.
That's true.
And Harold Brown is another. Yeah, so they're a very, very, very small group. Maybe they'll grow.
So Vegan Cowboy is the name of your novel. Tell us more about how you developed the theme around animal issues.
I have always wanted to do something to help animals, and I tended to be an armchair activist. I had gone to a couple of protests, and I'm not comfortable with it.
Yeah.
I give those people so much credit for going out there, rain or shine, in front of Marine World or in front of the stockyards and protesting. I think it's so admirable, but I'm very uncomfortable with it. Maybe if I did it more, I would ease into it. But my mode of help comes through writing. And I used to have an animal rights organization called The Right Cause, WRITE. And that was to help other people. I wrote the letters on behalf of them, and they would sign them and send them out. And it was an extension of that armchair activism. And then I just decided that if I'm going to reach more people, I need to write a book. So I did.
You make it sound easy.
Well, how come you decided to make it into a novel? I mean, there's lots of kind of books that people write about animal issues. Some people write very factual, heavy books. Other people write, you know, comic strip books.
Philosophical or cooking books.
Yeah, right. So how did you decide on the novel?
I think there are some amazing nonfiction books about veganism out there. And honestly, that would bore me to tears. I'm not a cook. You know, I don't like to cook. Writing a cookbook would be about 4 pages. Philosophically, I think there are a lot of books out there. I don't need to write another one. And I love stories. And first and foremost, I love movies. That's why I wrote screenplays. And I love to read. So for me, the whole idea of Vegan Cowboy came about because I've been single for a very long time, and I joke to friends who always say, "Are you dating? Is there anyone in your life?" My dad stopped asking years ago. And I would say, you know, the only man who could really steal my heart is a vegan cowboy, and they'd look at me sideways. And it's because when I moved to Petaluma about 26, 27 years ago, there weren't a lot of radio stations that I could get on my car radio. And one of them, actually two of them, were country stations. And I remember hearing Pam Tillis sing, "They Call Me Cleopatra because I'm the Queen of Denial."
Oh, yeah, I remember that song.
Yeah, and I just thought, that is so clever. And the more I started listening, the more these songs just resonated with me. I just thought they were either funny or they were clever, and I developed this love for the Southern drawl and the whole the whole cowboy getup. Yes, I realize it's all leather, but everything, it can be synthetic now, even down to the saddle. So that was the foray into Vegan Cowboy. I thought, well, I've been thinking about him long enough.
I don't think there's a large market for pleather saddles, though.
Yes, but I heard they're there. Someone told me that they do make them. And someone did ask me. They said, well, in the book, Granger rides a horse, and he has a saddle. Is it leather? And I thought, well, he turned his cattle ranch into a sanctuary. So before all that happened, he was not vegan. So why would he get rid of all his saddles? So that was my justification for leaving him in a leather saddle. But I don't even mention it in the book. I got queries from hardcore vegans about that, and I thought, wow, it didn't even occur to me.
Oh, those vegan police here.
Ooh, they're rabid.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny how there could be such, you know, someone could be doing such great things, but if there's one thing that appears to be inconsistent, people have to call that part out as opposed to applauding them for the other positive.
Well, and it is something that you have to think about when you transition to being vegan, because I myself had quite a collection of shoes and even one or two pair of cowboy boots. And then when I went vegan, I'm like, well, at first I wore them for a little while, but then I had the same problem. People would like look at your feet like, staring at them like, oh, you're vegan. And I'm like, oh, gosh, you know, do I need these shoes? Are still good. I'll have to go and buy something else. And I'm also into the environmental impact of your lifestyle. So, you know, you're throwing everything out. So I just had to make the compromise and give it all to Goodwill.
That's basically what I did. I remember saving up for a suede shirt. I wanted a suede shirt so badly. And I finally found this gorgeous peacock blue shirt. And I loved it. And then I became vegetarian. And I think I gave it to a friend, and she loved it. So, yeah, it's interesting when you transition. It's not just food choices. It encircles a whole variety of what your lifestyle entails.
Whenever somebody asks about my leather-looking shoes, I explain that it's all man-made materials put together by child slave labor in China.
Oh, Greg. Greg.
But, you know, veganism to me is a path, and many of us stop along the way at food and clothing and don't go all the way into household products and personal care products. It can be, you know, difficult to find and more expensive to try to live like a vegan policeman.
Well, and like you said, like I had a friend that's vegan, and they had a really difficult time getting a car with a steering wheel that wasn't wrapped in leather. Because almost all the car steering wheels are wrapped in these leather things. You don't think about what it is. You just like get in there and drive. But he was telling me, and I'm like, oh my God, I never thought about the fact that my steering wheel may be wrapped in leather.
Yeah, me neither. I of course, chose seats that weren't leather,
but
steering wheel?
Yeah.
Yeah, there are animal products in our tires and on the asphalt on the road. So
we just need to do the best we can. And the vegan cowboy in your novel, you talk a little bit about that path. And it seems a lot of it is based upon your own experiences, like you said. It seems like Ray, the main female character, is kind of based on you.
Yeah, it is. Some of my friends, they're reading the book and they say, wow, this is eerily familiar. Not all of it. I mean, I never met a vegan cowboy, but I do have a son who's 23 now, and some of the things that happened in the book, which I won't divulge, did happen to my son. And so I used it because it was also a little cathartic to be able to write about my experiences with I'm really glad my son doesn't like to read, because I don't think he'll read the book.
He'll be like, Mom.
That could be a good thing.
Yeah, he'll be like, Mom, I can't believe you told the whole world.
I know.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, whether you found it challenging to open up. And I know, I guess it seems like many writers find it cathartic just to get it out on paper. But was that a challenge for you?
No, it actually was. I really enjoyed it, and it was very easy. What I had to do, though, is go back and soften some of the critical parts with my ex-husband, because I really unloaded, and one of my sisters read it and said, I don't know. I don't know if you want someone knocking out your door at 3 a.m. with a rifle, you know?
When you meant unloaded, you meant unloaded.
Right, yeah, literally, yes. Well, you know, I guess the neat thing about your book, too, is sort of the theme of finding love late in life. And that seems to be, you know, a challenge for many people. But
especially when you're looking for a vegan cowboy.
Right.
Yeah, I know. I think I'm going to be looking for a while.
Well, you know,
Howard Lyman's already taken.
Yeah, and he's a little too old, okay, Liz?
Don't be an ageist.
I'm sorry, but I think he's 70. He's in his mid-70s, isn't he?
Oh, I don't know. He has lots of energy.
Yeah.
He's a vegan.
Yeah, he's a great guy. But anyway, yeah, well, back to your story.
I was going to say, it seems like, you know, now with plant-based diets and the growth of that, that really it prolongs our lives and it gives us quality of life. So I think that the neat thing about that is it really enables you to be someone who's capable of love and caring for someone else and having a relationship late in life because, you know, I think you're physically and mentally capable of it.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I also, one of the reasons I wanted to write about a late-in-life love story is Ray was never taught to follow her intuition. I don't think that's another huge topic, how we are not raised to follow our intuition and our gut instincts. We're directed more to society's morals and values and what we are deemed to do, get married, go to college, get married, have children. And so,
eat meat.
Yes.
Eat meat. Right.
Mary.
Right.
Yeah.
Go to Marineland and watch killer whales perform. And so it was, for her, it was deconstructing that whole philosophy that she was taught and really trying to follow her intuition. And to me, that was another major part of this story. So being 58 and being very happy, being alone, she honestly was very happy because at that point she really didn't trust her intuition to meet a man that would love and respect her and have that kind of compassion.
Right. And I think it shows that really at any age you can, you know, there's still time for change and growth and development.
Right, definitely.
Do you have any other books in the works?
I do. I'm almost done with the first draft of my second novel.
Do we get a teaser on what the title's going to be, or are you still working on that?
The working title is Faster Food, and it's not a thriller per se. It's more character study like Vegan Cowboy, but it's basically, I'll try and put it in a nutshell, it's basically about a group of senators, elitists, who realize that America's natural resources are quickly dwindling, so they come up with a plan to eliminate the lower classes, the riffraff that they consider expendable.
And it turns into Soylent Green?
No, but I might put that in the book. You've given me a new direction.
Well, be sure and thank me in your acknowledgement.
Well, Carol, can you tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about Vegan Cowboy and all your future works?
Yes. Right now, the book is available on Amazon and Kindle. So you would just go to Amazon.com and type in Vegan Cowboy, and you could find it. For anybody living in the Bay Area, the North Bay, Copperfield Books is an independent bookstore, and they will carry local authors. So the books are there.
We've been talking with Carol Tracy, author of Vegan Cowboy. Thanks a lot for being with us, Carol. It's been fun.
Oh, it's been great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Carol. On Sunday, September the 21st, I'll be giving a workshop entitled Eat and Grow Young, which will discuss specific foods and herbs and spices that will help you stop the aging process. That's from 11:30 to 1 o'clock on September the 21st. You can find reservation information by going to our website, vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACT Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the listen button. I'm Tom Linney.
I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.